Welcome, and thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are in listen-only mode until the question-and-answer session of today's conference. At that time, you may press star one on your phone to ask a question. I'd like to inform all parties that today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. I'd now like to turn the conference over to Paul Fulton. Thank you. You may begin.
Thank you, and thank you all for joining us today for this briefing to update you on CDC's COVID-19 response. We're joined today by CDC Director Dr. Robert Redfield and CDC's Incident Manager Dr. Jay Butler. Dr. Redfield will give opening remarks, and Dr. Butler will discuss an NNWR being released later today, as well as suggestions on how to navigate daily life as communities reopen. They'll take your questions later in this telebriefing. Please limit your question to one, and please limit it to the information being presented today. If you have questions about other topics, please contact the CDC Media Office, media@cdc.gov. At this time, I will turn the call over to Dr. Redfield.
Thank you, Paul, and thank all of you for joining us today. CDC's COVID-19 response is now in its sixth month, and while we're making real progress, we still have a lot of work ahead as we reopen America. CDC, like the scientific and public health institutions around the world, continue to learn a great deal about this new virus. We focus on how it's spread among people, how it's highly transmissible, and how people who are asymptomatic or presymptomatic can also contribute to spreading. Our recommendations have evolved based on the new information that becomes available. But it continues to be extremely important that we embrace the recommendations of social distancing, hand washing, and wearing a face covering when we're in public as some of the key defenses that we have against this virus. Later during this briefing, Dr. Butler is going to discuss the findings of an NNWR that looks at how the American people have responded to these key public health recommendations during the pandemic. But Dr. Butler is going to share specifics, but I wanted to take a moment to really say thank you to the American people for basically being selfless and taking on the precautions that we've requested of social distancing, wearing a face covering, and hand hygiene to protect the most vulnerable from the threat of COVID. I know that people are eager to return to normal activities and ways of life. However, it's important that we remember that the situation is unprecedented and that the pandemic has not ended. And as I said earlier, it's going to be critical to continue to embrace the principles of social distancing, hand hygiene, and wearing a face covering in public. That is why today we're releasing some common sense suggestions people can take to reduce their risk as their communities open up and they begin to reengage in daily life and attend larger gatherings. Each of you have been active responders to this pandemic, making changes in your life and taking on new challenges in the face of this evolving health threat. We recognize how hard some of these changes have been and the consequence some of them have had on individuals and families and communities. So once again, to the American people, I would like to say thank you for being the individual public health heroes that we need right now to fight this pandemic. Now I'd like to turn this discussion over to Dr. Jay Butler, our COVID-19 incident manager, to discuss our recommendations.
Thank you, Dr. Redfield, and good afternoon and good morning, everybody. It's a pleasure to be able to speak with you today. We're now deep into a global pandemic caused by a virus that we didn't even know existed only 6-7 months ago. So I suppose the bad news today is the pandemic is not over, and it's important to recognize that. While COVID-19 is still making headlines everywhere, we know that the pandemic hasn't affected everyone everywhere in the same way. The good news is, nationally, we have been successful in flattening the curve. The number of new cases each day has been relatively plateaued over a prolonged period of time. But right now, communities are experiencing different levels of transmission, and this is occurring as they gradually ease up on some of the community mitigation efforts and gradually reopen. We recognize that we're all getting tired of staying at home. People long for the lives that they had back in December, And as we live in, as we head into the summer months, we know that Americans will be looking forward to reconnecting with family and friends and be able to attend events, and we want that to occur as safely as possible. Today, the CDC is releasing two online resources aimed at helping people make decisions about how to resume some activities while continuing to follow many of the public health recommendations that can still help us to all protect ourselves and our communities. Every activity that involves interacting with others has some degree of risk right now, and we want to provide you with the information and suggestions you need to make decisions about which activities may be able to resume and what level of risk you may have to accept. So here's a general rule of thumb. The more closely you interact with others, the longer the interaction lasts, and the greater the number of people involved in the interaction, the higher the risk of COVID-19 spread. Understanding these risks and how to adopt different prevention measures can help you protect yourselves and others against the virus. We continue to ask everyone to follow the guidance of their state and local health authorities, and also that we all do our part to embrace prevention strategies, including social distancing as much as possible, maintaining a distance of at least 6 feet from other persons, washing your hands or using a alcohol-based hand cleaner on a regular basis, and wearing a face covering in public where appropriate. We actually practice what we preach here at CDC. So for face coverings, we get into the building wearing one. The face covering that I wear, I use this instead of a tie or socks to express my personality. So I have a cloth face covering made with patterns of grizzly bears and salmon on them to show my homage to my home in Alaska. I also have one with an Alaska state flag on it. So these steps of social distancing, hand hygiene, and face covering can help reduce the risk of COVID-19 spread and protect those most vulnerable to severe disease. Today, we're releasing the information on our website to help people make informed decisions about whether to go out and what precautions to take if they do. These documents give suggestions on things you can think about and questions you can ask, both about how much COVID-19 activity there is in your community and what type of event or activity you're considering. We recommend that you get the answers to these questions and consider what they mean when making your decisions. These suggestions also provide practical tips for given situations. For example, when dining out, see if there's an option to sit outside, or ensure that tables are at least 6 feet apart so you can maintain social distancing. If you hit the gym, don't share items that can't be cleaned or sanitized after use, and refrain from high fives and elbow bumps, which involve getting closer than 6 feet to others. If your local library is open, see if curbside pickup is available. If you want to gather with friends for a cookout, as much as possible, use single-serve options and remind guests to wash their hands before and after eating. Maintain social distancing, wear cloth face coverings when possible, practice hand hygiene, and avoid sharing frequently touched items. I recently was able to get together with some friends for the first time in about 10 weeks, and it was nice to reconnect, and we were able to do these things and have a safer gathering that way. And finally, for those interested in larger gatherings, we've also added a page on our website with suggestions that can help people who are planning or attending events or gatherings as they prepare for and join larger events. Before we take questions, I also want to mention a report that's been published in the MMWR today. The article underscores the fact that American people have taken mitigation efforts seriously to prevent the spread of SARS coronavirus 2, and it demonstrates our country's collective spirit in responding to the pandemic. This was an online survey involving adults nationwide, and particularly those from New York City and Los Angeles, and this was conducted in May to assess adherence to public health recommendations. Results of the survey showed that respondents generally supported stay-at-home measures and non-essential business closures. They reported often or always wearing face coverings in public areas, and they believed that their state restrictions were the right balance They agreed that their state's restrictions were the right balance of being restrictive and not too restrictive. So I want to thank the American people for helping us get through the last few months. This represents an incredible public health achievement, and the American people are responsible for that. The direction of the pandemic is in all of our hands, so let's wash those hands. And I ask for your continued efforts. I know it's difficult to make changes to our daily lives. We're not out of the woods yet. In the coming weeks, we could see increases in the number of cases of COVID-19 as states reopen, and as there's an increase in public gatherings as we move into the summer across the country. It's too soon to tell if this will happen, but CDC is working closely with state health departments to monitor the disease activity and to support responses to any increases. In addition, we must look ahead to the fall and winter. While what will happen is uncertain, we have to pull all our efforts towards gearing up for additional potential challenges that we see every fall and winter, and that is influenza. If anything, we must be overprepared for what we might face later this year. Getting a flu vaccine will be more important than ever, as flu and COVID-19 could be circulating together as we move into the fall and winter months. So I look forward to taking your questions, and with that, I will stop. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, Dr. Redfield, and thank you, Dr. Butler. We're going to take your questions now. Media, please remember to limit your question to one, and please limit your question to the information being presented today. If you have questions about other topics, please contact the CDC Media Office by emailing media@cdc.gov. Operator, we are ready for questions.
Thank you. We'll now begin our question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question, please press star, then one, and record your name clearly when prompted. If you need to withdraw your question, you may do so by pressing star, then two. Okay, and our first question comes from Mike Stowe from AP. Your line is now open.
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call. So there's two sets of guidance, and one of them is about holding or attending mass gatherings. That includes political rallies. Can you comment on whether the CDC is saying that political rallies are okay right now?
Yeah, Thanks for that question, Mike. So first of all, the guideline is really for any type of gathering, whether it's the backyard barbecue or something larger. And it's not intended to endorse any particular type of event, but to be able to be applicable to any type of event that may occur. So the most important things are some of those issues related to being able to maintain social distancing, having access to hand hygiene, encouraging face covering, and of course, not attending events if you are ill or have recently been exposed to COVID-19.
Next question, please.
Thank you. And our next question comes from Elizabeth Wise from USA Today. Your line is now open.
Hi, thanks so much for taking my question. Looking at these guidelines, if the American public were to adhere to these, maintaining social distance, hand hygiene, always wearing face masks when out in public, do you think that we can keep levels of COVID down until we have a vaccine? Is this a viable plan moving forward?
Thanks for that question also. Yes, the whole goal here is to continue to keep that curve as flattened as possible to delay onset of cases for two reasons. First of all, we want to make sure that critical infrastructure that's important for societal function, as well as the availability of healthcare services, is maintained, and that none of these services are overwhelmed by a sudden increase in the number of cases. The second item is just what you touched on, is it increases the chances that there will be people who would benefit from vaccination if they can avoid becoming infected before a vaccine is available.
Next question, please.
Thank you. And our next question comes from Betsy McKay from the Wall Street Journal. Your line is now open.
Hi, thanks very much. You know, as you've talked about, there's been a lot learned more about how this virus spreads through close contact and, you know, large events and so forth. So I wondered if cases do start going up again, do you think, would widespread lockdowns be necessary once again, or what more targeted interventions could be used in these cases?
Yeah, thank you for that question also. So as the most important thing is to be able to monitor what is happening in terms of people's activity, what is the degree of adherence, and then also monitoring the degree of transmission that's occurring through disease surveillance. If cases begin to go up again, and particularly if they go up dramatically, it's important to recognize that more extensive mitigation efforts, such as what were implemented back in March, may be needed again. And that is a decision that really needs to be made locally based on what is happening within the community regarding disease transmission. Again, I'll return to my opening comment that we know the pandemic is not over, and even looking at some of the serology data, it suggests that the vast majority of Americans still have not been exposed to this virus.
Next question, please.
Thank you. And our next question comes from Leanne Sun from the Washington Post. Your line is now open.
Thank you very much for taking my call, Dr. Butler, Dr. Redfield, and I hope we can continue this on a regular basis going forward. Regarding the mass gatherings, President Trump has announced that he's going to hit the campaign trail next week. The RNC has also announced that they're going to hold a convention and they're not going to ask people to wear masks. Given the considerations that you have put out here about wearing cloth coverings when people are singing or shouting or chanting, I'm wondering whether the CDC is concerned about this way of seeding more infections if people are going to be in a closed indoor space and not wearing masks, and what additional suggestions you might have.
Well, thank you for that easy question, Lena. So the guidelines really, I think, speak for themselves. and they are not regulations, they are not commands, but they are recommendations or even suggestions, as I believe how it's titled, to be able to, of how you can have a gathering that will keep people as safe as possible.
Next question, please.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Dan Vergano from BuzzFeed News. Your line is now open.
Hi, thanks very much. You said it's too soon to tell if this will happen about outbreaks if people don't stick to these measures. But we are seeing signs in some states, Arizona notably, of increases that look like they're coming back. Is it really too soon to tell if this will happen? And I hate to stick a second question in there, but the MMWR is embargoed for 1 p.m., but you've sort of already blown the results. So I wonder if we can just go ahead and report that.
So regarding the question about, there are areas, as I mentioned earlier, where there's an increase in the number of cases that are reported, and there's a number of different drivers of that as we contact and actually in some places have staff that are boots on the ground assisting our state, local, and tribal partners. Sometimes an increase is driven by increased availability of testing. Sometimes it's driven by outbreaks, and we've seen outbreaks in certain occupational settings, in long-term care facilities. Early on, we saw clusters of infections in shelters for people experiencing homelessness. And sometimes there is increased transmission in the community as well. So in each area where we see an uptick, these are the questions that we want to explore to determine whether or not it's a issue of increased infection in the community, or are we recognizing more infections through increased testing. It's important to know, of course, that a certain proportion of people who become infected never develop any symptoms. So as testing has become more widely available, some people are tested without any symptoms. There are a certain proportion of people who will be diagnosed and will help contribute to that increase in the number of cases in any given location. And in some locations, it'll be a combination of all those factors that are driving the increase.
Thank you, Dr. Butler. All information presented during this telebriefing is embargoed until 1 p.m. Eastern. Next question, please.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Tom Howell from the Washington Times. Your line is now open.
Hi. Thanks for doing the call. I had a question about testing. Just want to know, we've heard a lot about the volume of testing and allowing people to get a test if they want one. Have you seen any strategies, though, in states or localities that seem to work in actually reducing transmission and amount to a wise allocation of resources? And if so, what do those strategies look like? Thanks.
Sure. Well, first of all, I think it's important to recognize that testing is not something that in and of itself reduces transmission. It's then taking the test results and being able to make sure that people who are infected are then able to be isolated and reduce their exposures to other people. Right now, we're actually in the process of working with the states on their plans for their strategies for testing, and this is using some of the funding that was made available to them through some of the recent appropriations legislation. And there's a number of innovative ideas out there, and including using university public health students to be able to increase the access to testing, as well as follow-up of contacts of people who test positive. Other states are using state employees that have recently been laid off, or not laid off, furloughed. They're being brought back to work to work on these issues. And so it's really quite a variety of measures that are innovative that have been undertaken by state and local health departments around the country.
Thank you. Next question, please.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Rob Stein from National Public Radio. Your line is now open.
Yeah, hi. Thanks very much for doing this and for taking my question. So I want to just follow up on a question a little while ago. So cases are going up in, you know, maybe 20 states around the country. And so what is CDC's thoughts about why the cases are going up? As you said, you have boots on the ground. Is it going up primarily because of increase in testing, or is it more that people aren't following these guidelines? And a lot of public health experts say there's not been enough of an increase in testing to explain the increase in cases. But I'm curious, what is CDC's analysis of really what the situation is? Is the virus spreading more right now? And the second question is, you said that the country has flattened the curve, so it's at a plateau, but that still means, you know, 800 or more Americans are dying every day, and over the course of the summer, that means thousands more could die by the fall. Is that an acceptable level?
Yeah. So in terms of the first part of the question, as I was saying earlier, it's going to be variable in different parts of the countries. There's no one answer to your question that's going to apply to every area. So that's why it takes really a deep dig in situation to be able to look at that. So in terms of one of the ways we can begin to tease that apart is also to look at rates of hospitalization, also looking at emergency department utilization for COVID-like illness, because the test results in and of themselves only reflect a bit of the transmission that's occurring. We know that some people don't develop symptoms. We know that of those who develop symptoms, not everyone will be tested. And so we have other ways to look at what are some of the metrics for more severe illness. Are hospitalization rates going up? Are admissions to ICU increasing? Right now, in looking nationally again, the hospitalization rates are going down, and in most of the places where we've looked at the increase in the recent week or two in the number of cases diagnosed, we're not confirming dramatic increases in the number of hospitalizations. But this is something that is ongoing, and we will continue to monitor very closely. So that's by no means meant to suggest that this is not something that we're not very concerned about and will be working on very closely.
Yeah, Rob, maybe I'll add one thing, Redfield. As Jay said, it's multifactorial, but one of the elements in that, and he mentioned each of the states are putting together their strategy, but because of the asymptomatic and pre-symptomatic presentation of this virus being much more common than was appreciated in the winter, one of the critical features, particularly in protecting people that are vulnerable, is to institute aggressive surveillance by doing antigen testing, viral testing, in individual groups that are considered vulnerable. So there has been requests that all individuals that are residents of the 15,000-plus nursing homes in the United States undergo testing to see if there's a symptomatic infection. Same with prisons. It's also been encouraged to be extended to other risk settings, whether it's certain meatpacking plants, homeless population, urban clinics. And different states, to different degrees, have operationalized that. There's some states that have almost tested every nursing home resident. So it's not explaining everything, but I just, as Jay said, it's multifactorial, and clearly now there's been able to be expanded testing in the what we consider vulnerable surveillance populations that I think is also contributing to some of the number increases.
Thank you, Dr. Redfield. And we have time for two more questions.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Alexandria Kelly from The Hill. Your line is now open.
Hi. Thank you for taking my question. Really good to hear from you guys again. I wanted to ask about a Yahoo News article that was published on June 10th, and it had said through a presumably leaked document from the CDC that coronavirus infections are spiking in the U.S. even as they begin to decline in highly affected countries like Brazil and Spain, Italy and Germany. Do you have any comment on that?
Haven't seen that document.
Follow up with us at media at cdc.gov, please. Thank you. Next question, please.
Thank you. And our final question comes from Carl O'Donnell from Reuters News. Your line is now open.
Hi, this is Carl. So I just wanted to ask, there's, you know, a number of states, I'm thinking, you know, Arizona, Texas, North Carolina, have, you know, significantly relaxed social distancing. And what we've seen, you know, is that seems to have translated not only into, you know, higher case counts, which could be a function of testing, but also higher hospitalization rates. Do you guys have any concern that some states relax their social distancing measures too early?
So I think, first of all, it's important to recognize that temporal association doesn't prove causation, and that's one of the reasons why we don't just sit back and look at the numbers, but also try to get visibility in the community of what's actually going on. And Your question about hospitalization, I think, is spot on, because that is one of the measures of whether or not there's more severe illness occurring, or are we diagnosing more asymptomatic people. So to reiterate something that Dr. Redfield mentioned, the importance of surveillance to be able to understand the evolution of the pandemic is critical. And actually, if I can maybe return to a second to the earlier question about rates of disease in the United States versus other areas, it's important to recognize that the degree of testing and the robustness of surveillance in other nations actually can be quite different than in the United States. So while there are reports of the number of cases that occur throughout the world, it's important to know that in some countries there's probably a much greater proportion of cases that go undiagnosed. And overall, those numbers are probably a small proportion of the cases that actually occur.
Thank you, Dr. Butler. Thank you, Dr. Redfield. And thank you all for joining us today for today's briefing. As a reminder,
Paul, let me just say one thing, if I could, to everyone who tuned in. I do want to thank all of you. I said this many years ago when I started, several years ago when I started CDC, that the public health and media that reports really are critical partners with us in getting the public health information out that we want to get out to the American public. You know, I'm hopeful that we'll continue to have these dialogues. I just want to thank you for taking the time. I want to thank you for what you do to help communicate the messages that we feel are important to get to the American public. So thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Redfield. As a reminder, all the information we've shared today is embargoed until 1 p.m. Eastern. And we'll send out an email to the media list that includes links to these documents. Also, please continue to check CDC's website, cdc.gov/COVID-19, for the latest updates on our efforts. And if you have further questions, please call our media line, 404-639-3286, or email media@cdc.gov. Thank you again.
Thank you for your participation in today's conference. All participants may disconnect at this time.